closely for about 2 years, and working in the physical plant is kind of akin to living in the dorms. You work and live very closely with one another, and thus you accumulate a lot of embarrassing stories you could tell on one another. But as Greg Hasselhoff counseled me, remember who gets the mic after you. So I'm going to refrain from telling any stories about Joe. Just a few brief things about Joe that would stand out. Joe loves the Lord. He's a dedicated servant to his local church and has served in many capacities over the years. He's a family man, been married 20 years and has 3 children. The third kind of distinctive about Joe is he loves sports. And I say love, I mean really loves. He can quote any UK basketball statistic from 1980 in a Rain Man-like precision. So it's a little spooky, but again, Joe's going to share with us an event that happened in his life this past year, and it, I think, demonstrates Joe's commitment to the Lord and the reality that the Lord's had his hand upon Joe these past years. Joe Kelly.
Thank you, Eric, and what an honor it is to stand before you all this morning and be able to share my story. Like Eric said, I do have a wife of soon to be 20 years and 3 children. I've got Wilson, who's age 15. I got Colton, who's age 8. And then I've got a little girl, Jordan Kate, who is daddy's girl. She's 6. So one thing I want to share to you before I get to my story is a little bit of my Christian journey. I became a Christian at age 12. I feel I was led by example through my mom and dad and grandmother. My mom's here today to support me, so I do appreciate that. And from there, I kind of just matured as a Christian and grown. And then in 2006, I was ordained as a deacon for my local church. And I continued to grow in the Lord, and that's brought me to where I am today. Not really a speaker. I haven't really did any, much speaking until I had the event, life event, happen to me. So you'll have to bear with me. But I'm going to start my journey in August of 2015. August is my birthday month, and I'm like most guys. You know, I don't really go to the doctor. Don't really get a physical. Don't do that kind of thing much. But my wife had been on me a little bit. Mainly, she just. You know, I had put on some weight and just needed somebody to tell me beside her that I needed to lose some. So I did go on into the, I went on into the doctor. I had turned 42 that month, and I went in to get a physical. And before I went in, they did some preliminary blood work and that type thing. All that was good. So I just went in thinking, you know, this is going to be more or less a waste of my time. So I went in and sat down and with my doctor, who's also a friend of mine. We played basketball and did things together when we were younger. And we were having a conversation, sitting there talking. And at the end of the visit, he listens to me. And as he's listening to me, I noticed him kind of tilt his head at me. And I was sitting there thinking, this probably isn't good. And he steps back for a second, and he comes back in, and he flips his stethoscope to the other side and puts it on my chest and listens and backs up and thumbs through my chart. And I told him before he could say anything, I said, Rick was there. I said, you're freaking me out. I said, what's going on? And he said, Joe, I think you've got a little bit of a heart murmur and you've got a valve leaking. But don't worry about it. It's probably just a murmur, nothing to really mount anything. We'll send you on and get an echo just to confirm that it's probably not nothing, just something that goes along with getting a little older. So I went ahead and left that day. When I got in the car, I just had this feeling come over me that it was more than what he was telling me it was. So I prayed in the car that day for whatever I may have or may be dealing with, that the Lord just takes care of it. You know, just take care of it. I've got the family I just told you all about, and I prayed for the Lord to take care of it. So I came back to work that week, worked the rest of the week, and on Friday morning I was sitting in my office, and I got an email that chimed in, and it was the results of the echocardiogram. And I really couldn't make heads or tails of it. I read it, and I just seen the word severe on it three times. So if you've ever had that feeling where you just have that instant feeling of just kind of being sick all over, that's kind of what I had come over me. And about that time, Eric had walked into my office, and I told him, I said, Eric, I'm going to be no use to you or Asbury today. I've got something on my mind that I need to get taken care of. So about that time when I get out in the car, Dr. Hempel calls me. The nurse had sent the results to me before he had a chance to talk to me, so it kind of went around backwards. So he said, Joe, do you want to meet me or do you want to come into the office to talk to me? And I said, I don't want you to do anything special for me. I'll just meet you at the office. So when I went into the office, this is where my journey really begins. I went into the office that day and that morning, and I said, Rick, you know, we've known each other a long time. Don't talk to me like a doctor. Just tell me what I've got and what I need to do to make it right. And he said, Joe, your aortic valve is leaking severely. And I thought, my first thought, well, you know, that's not good, but they can take care of that. And he said, Joe, but the second thing, on a more serious note, is that you've got a ascending aortic aneurysm that's at high risk of rupture. It's close to 6 centimeters, which for you math guys, I don't know if I'm exactly right, but I think that's close to 2 inches around in my chest. And he said, it's going to require open heart surgery, and it's going to require it sooner than later. And he said, Joe, I'm being up front with you. In all honesty, it's a blessing that you're even alive. You shouldn't be. It should have already ruptured, and there's no surviving aortic aneurysm. So he went ahead and set me up with Central Baptist and to go and meet with the surgeon. But at that time, when I got in the car that morning, I was overwhelmed for briefly. And most people that know me know that I'm not really an emotional person unless I'm screaming at a ball game. But beside that, I don't really get that emotional, and I need to work on that. But when I got in the car that day, I prayed about it, and I was driving home, and it led me on down to the farm. My family, we've got a farm we've got a cabin back in the woods and a lot of land. And I went down there that day, and after I got this news, and the whole way I was driving, I was reflecting upon my family and how am I going to tell them and what am I going to do. And I was afraid. I mean, I was afraid. I don't know if you've ever been there where you just got an overwhelming fear of what's getting ready to take place. So the first thing I did when I went into the cabin that day to sit down, I looked up Bible verses on fear. And the first thing that came to my mind, or the first thing I seen, and then it was, fear is mentioned 365 times in the Bible. So I don't know if I read it, but it seems like I read 365 verses that afternoon. But two that stood out to me at that point that I kind of relied on throughout this. The first one is Isaiah 41, verse 13. And it says, for I am the Lord your God who takes your right hand and say to you, do not fear, I will help you. And the second verse is John 14, verse 27. Peace I leave with you, my peace I give you. I do not give as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled. Do not be afraid. So at that point, I decided that I was going to turn this over to the Lord. There wasn't nothing I could do about it, but I could just pray about it on a consistent basis and turn this over to the Lord and let his hands be in it. And thank him for my doctor finding what I had going on. And in that time, I sat and reflected of how I kind of got from where I was to where I'm at. And I want to encourage you all, even being young students, one day in your quiet time, just think about what's led you to Asbury or what's led you to what you're doing today or what you plan on doing when you get out of school. God does have a plan for us. So as I'm leaving that farm, the one thing I've got to do is I've got to go home. I've got to tell my family, but first I've got to tell my wife and 3 children that their daddy is going to go through a very serious, you know, operation. And you know what? There's a chance I won't make it. There's a chance I may not make it to the operation. So that's on a Friday night. I get home, and we usually go out and eat dinner on Friday. We didn't that night. We ate, and I'd made my mind up that I was going to tell them after we got through eating. So I called them in and got ready to talk about it, and all of a sudden I switched to talking about my son playing football. he was going to play football, and I chickened out. And it reminded me, this is a funny story, but it reminded me, a lot of you young guys will experience this one day. Back before I married my wife, you know, I had to go ask the mom and dad. So I went over to their house one night and ate supper, and that was the intention I was going to ask. And that night I did the same thing. I never did get around to asking the mom and dad if I could have their daughter in marriage. So my mind went there. You know, it's the second time you've chickened out on something really major. So I thought about it that night, and I prayed about it, and I thought, you know, my wife, she's a strong lady. She'll be able to take it. My 15-year-old son worries a lot. It'll worry him to death. My 8-year-old boy, maybe, you know, he may understand what's going on. My 6-year-old girl will just know that daddy's sick. So it went Saturday. I called him into the living room, and we talked about it. And as I'm sitting there telling him what's going on, the one thing that helped me throughout this was something that 8-year-old boy said to me. I don't think my mom knows this. As we were sitting there in the living room, the little boy that I said probably wouldn't know what's going on, he said, "Daddy, if something happens during this surgery," he said, "you'll get to go be with Jesus, and you'll get to be with Mimi and Nanny," which that's the two grandmothers that had passed the previous year or two. And he said, "If not, you'll wake up and you'll be all better." So at that point, I knew that, you know, I was going to be okay, and my family understood. And it brought me back to the verse in Matthew 18:4, "Whoever humbles herself like a child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven." So that little boy, I used that, and I thought about that a lot as I continued my journey and to where I'm going to go through this process. So I came back to work for a couple days that week. I told the family. A lot of things happened. A lot of people prayed. Just an overwhelming amount of support. But God wasn't through working in this situation yet. Robin and I went over to Central Baptist to meet with the surgeon. He was the only surgeon in Kentucky that could do the procedure that I needed. I sat down and met with the guy, and he was a nice guy. But I had read something about maybe repairing a valve. I knew I'd have to get all my aorta replaced, and that's the part that was really nerve-wracking. But when I got in the car that day, I asked Robin, I said, "What do you think about him?" And she said, "Well, I don't know. What do you think?" And I said, "Well, I just didn't feel like that's the guy for me. But, Robin, what other option do we have?" And I said, "We're scheduled, and I've got to get this done, and I really don't have any other options." So I came back to work kind of against doctor's orders, but I couldn't sit and think about it the whole time. So I came to work for a few days, and I think this is the reason I came back to work, you all, is I met with one of our guys that does a lot of flooring here with the university, and I was telling him that I'm going to be out for a while. You'll have to, you know, talk to Eric or deal with somebody else on all the issues. And I told him what I was going on. And he said, "Well, Joe," he said, "I just had a friend that I graduated college with that went through the same thing, and he lives down in Florida. And would you want to talk to him?" And I said, "Yeah, I would love to get some more info." So that night he arranged for him to call me around 8 o'clock. And this is one of the things that really stands out to me in this story, the way God works. He told me that this man has been blessed financially his whole life. He told me that. And he was able to visit a lot of different hospitals, but he came into contact with the guy at the Cleveland Clinic that, at the time, he's did a lot of big names and the top cardiothoracic surgeon, not just in Cleveland, but in the United States. And I said, "Well, I'd love to be able to get with somebody like that." And he said, "Well, Joe, I hope I didn't overstep my boundaries today, but I made a call for you today, and I've got it arranged for you to talk with him, but you need to write a cover letter tonight." And I did. He called me the next morning, and he got me in. So, and now all that I can say to that is that's got to be a God thing for me to be able to get from where I was at, worrying about the surgeon at Central Baptist, getting to the Cleveland Clinic. So I get over, I go ahead and do some testing, get to the clinic. And when I get there, you know, I'm at peace during all this, but That night, we prayed about it, my wife and I, and there was a lot of people praying, sending messages, and for the first time, when I went to lay down that night, I felt just an overwhelming peace that only can be described as that peace beyond understanding that you hear about, but until then, I never had experienced it. Because until that point, until I went through the situation, I wasn't really good with medical situations, whether it was with the kids or the wife or myself. I kind of panicked. But at that time, I received that peace. I went to bed that night. I did not wake up. I got up at 5:30 and went into the clinic and to prepare myself for the surgery. And that morning, I'm rolled down a long hallway. It's got doors all over it. The clinic is, it's just huge. And I can't lay down. You know, I'm sitting up Indian style on the bed, waiting outside the operating room door. And a lady comes in. Her name was Lisa. That's all I can remember is her name was Lisa. I've tried to get in touch with her, but I haven't been able to. She said, do we need to give you anything to calm you down before you go into the operating room? Because they're going to do a couple things to you while you're in here before you're put to sleep. But she said, it seems like you're very calm. And I said, I'd rather defer on the medicine to calm me down. I said, I do have peace. And she said, how do you explain being so calm? And I said, the only thing I can say is it's just through all the prayers that I'm getting at home and the prayer that I've had. And this lady, probably against everything that the Cleveland Clinic goes against, she climbs up in the end of the bed and sits right across from me, Indian style. I'm here. She's right here in front of me. And she's the charge nurse for the operating room, so she's not somebody that just started. She said, do you mind if I pray for you? And I said, no, I can use all of them I can get. So she prayed for me, and I went in. Had to sign some documents, some more documents that I didn't know I'd have to sign. And from there, I went into surgery, and the next thing I remember is I'm waking up. And as I'm waking up, I'm laying there in ICU, and I've got tubes coming out of every place on my body. I'm on a ventilator. I'm on life support. And the odd thing is I can remember everything. I can remember, beside the part of me being asleep, I can remember everything. I can remember waking up and wanting that thing out of my mouth. But when you're in that situation, by having faith, it pulled me through that situation too, because it's easy when you see yourself looking a lot different than you did before you went in. It would have been easy for me to panic. So I started praying, which I don't know how long that time was, but I can remember praying, God, remind me, every time this thing kicks on, I've got to breathe. Because every time I would forget to breathe, the machine would kick on. I can remember telling myself that. And he pulled me through, and I got out of it. At that time, Robin came back, and another funny story. I thought it was funny. She didn't. That paperwork I was telling you that I was signing the 6 or 8 hours before that, it was a question that they presented to me by myself, because that's the way they do it. They say, if you're on life support, do you want your family or anybody to see you? And, you know, you're on the spot. You got to sign yes or no. So, of course, I signed no. I would rather my family not see me. So Robin told me when I woke up, as I'm sitting there, this is another praise, is that the surgeon did not have to remove my aortic valve, but he was able to repair it. So I've still got my valve. It's repaired. And she was going on about how I pulled through and how I did good. But then the next thing, and you young guys, one day when you get married, you'll know what I'm talking about on this. She said, I'm glad you're doing okay, but I cannot believe you would sign something saying I cannot come back and see you. We've been sitting out here for hours. So I knew things were starting to get just a tad bit back to normal when she got on me no sooner than I was out. So she's a principal at elementary school, and I tell everybody she's got to make a good boss because she does some of it at home. But I can say that without her here. So... You know, I continue to recover quickly. You know, I'm less than 4 months out, and I go from the first three or four days, and my mom was there throughout the whole thing with me. I had two ladies in my room the whole time keeping me going, but I went from the first 4 days not being able to walk to here to the steps to 4 months later being able to get out and do some things again. So I don't think I could have pulled through this situation without having my faith and my beliefs and just the power of prayer and what it does for us on a daily basis. So in conclusion to the story I've told, what I would like for people to get out of this is, you always hear, you know, you got to be ready. You never know when your time's coming. Well, you know, I'd always heard that and thought I was ready, but I want you to ask yourself today, are you really ready? Are you ready with those relationships, with your spiritual relationship? Are you ready if your time is today? You all are young kids, but we just never know when the Lord's coming back. Or, you know, I was beside being a little overweight, I was a picture of health. You know, I ran and lifted weights, did all the right things, but life threw me a curveball, and I wasn't completely ready for that. But through prayer and through the support of my family and friends, it helped pull me through this. So I hope through my story you can see the power of prayer and just being ready, and be thankful on a daily basis for the blessings you do have in your life. And, you know, I had a close call, but God's shoulders are small enough or big enough for the smallest things or the biggest things. So I pray as you all conclude your school year here, I know you've got exams coming, and I know some of you all are seniors and you'll be entering the workforce. I just pray that when you do run in those stressful times, that you do rely on God and you do pray about it and just decide to turn it over to Him. So I wanted to say that. And I want to close with this verse. It's Matthew 24, verse 36. But concerning that day and hour, no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, nor the Son, but the Father only. So, in saying that, I would like to pray for us. Dear Heavenly Father, I want to thank you for this day you've given me and the opportunity to come in front of these young people and share my story, Lord, and hopefully they get something out of it and just see the power that you possess and the things that you can do in someone's life if they just turn their life over to you, Lord. Lord, I want to thank you for every man and woman within this room, Lord. I pray that you're with them throughout this year. And if there's anyone in this room, Lord, that doesn't know you, I pray that today is the day that they come to know you. Lord, I want to pray for all the prayer requests that we have. I know we've all got something that we need prayer about, whether it be sickness or death or just something minor that we need help, Lord. I pray that today is the day that we turn those things over to you also. Thank you for the life that you've given me. I thank you for putting me at Asbury, Lord. Lord, please forgive us when we fail you. In your name we pray. Amen.